Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Network on Sunday, April 15th, 2018. This is episode 1480. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by TurboTax Live, new from TurboTax. Now you can get a personal review of your tax return with a CPA or EA right on your screen. Talk live with a tax expert as often as you need for tax advice to help you file with confidence. Go to TurboTaxLive.com/TechGuy. And by ActiveCampaign. If you have a growing business and you want to acquire more customers, you need ActiveCampaign. Their solution goes beyond marketing automation. Get the right type of message to the right person at the right time. For a free trial, go to ActiveCampaign.com/twit. And by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website with WordPress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month, and you'll get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yes. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all of that jazz. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888. I know I say it so fast, don't I? 888-826. You're writing this down? 5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. You can also reach us via Skype if you're outside that area. Use Skype out to call that number. It shouldn't cost you anything. You know what you really should write down? The only thing you really need is the website, because everything, including the phone number and a link to our fabulous chat room at irc.twit.tv, all of that stuff is located in a convenient, easy-to-use package at techguylabs.com. Also, answers to every question, everything we talk about, audio and video from previous shows, Tech Guy, that's me, I'm the Tech Guy. Labs, that's me in my lab coat with my Bunsen burners and beakers and mixing up a potion. TechGuyLabs.com. That's it. That's all you need to remember. Anything else you can find right there. Let's see. There's so many interesting stories in the news today. I don't know where to begin. I guess I should warn you, as I did yesterday, if you didn't hear the show yesterday, that don't be afraid, don't be alarmed, but when next time you use your credit card and the server or the storekeeper doesn't ask for a signature, don't be alarmed. They're not violating policy. All the major credit card companies, MasterCard, Visa, American Express, and Discover, dropped that requirement this week. So it's still up to the merchant if they feel like it. But, you know, this makes sense. They don't. I routinely, when it's a digital thing and I'm doing it with my finger, I just put, squiggles, right? Don't you? Do you actually laboriously sign your legal signature? It's not a very good way to identify somebody, frankly. And so now that we have chips and pins and all of that stuff, although it's sad, they dropped the signature, but they didn't require the pin, which would have been the right way to do that. You know, when you get a meal anywhere outside the U.S., recognizing that it's kind of a security thing, that when, you know, you pay for a meal, you give them your credit card, and they go off for 5 minutes, who knows what they're doing? They could be copying your credit card, all sorts of things. They have everything they need to use it. You really have to trust the waiter, and I do trust the server, I do. But, you know, recognizing that that's a potential security issue, in other countries, they come to you with a little thing, and they swipe it in front of you. And you put in the, if there's a pin required, you put in the pin there. That's probably the main reason they're not requiring the pin, is because most restaurants don't have that. They still have to go in the back room. You won't have to sign a slip anymore. Let's face it. This is a mess. This is just terrible. It's a security nightmare. And unfortunately, I love it that we live in a world where there's a certain amount of trust, right? And we just kind of trust one another. And we assume you're not going to rip me off. I'm not, you know, I trust you. Go ahead, take the credit card. And I like that. That's and you know what? 99% of the time, that's fine. Unfortunately, there are, you know, they're bad guys, bad actors in the world who take advantage of trusting nice people. They're bad people. They don't, and they're greedy. Mostly, I think it's they're greedy people. They're desperate for money. And so they see no, or they're, you know, damaged somehow and they see no harm or they don't feel any empathy or whatever. And they just take advantage of these things. And this is a gaping hole. I mean, this security hole, it's obvious to anybody that it's based on trust. And if you're untrustworthy, you go, yeah, you rub your hands with glee. We talked a couple of weeks ago about skimmers that are in a lot of the swiping machines. It's easy to put a little shim in there or a skimmer and capture credit card information that way. The credit card companies make so much money off credit cards that they really are willing to absorb these losses. There are significant losses. Who here hasn't had a credit card stolen and used to buy stuff? You know, the laws have changed a little bit. It is now, it is weird. This changed earlier, I think it was in early 2017. The law for liability shifted. It was all on the credit card company. They paid the loss. But it shifted when we came out with those new PIN cards last year to whoever has the lowest security. So merchants have of late been responsible for, you know, if you go and buy a shirt from a merchant and the merchant doesn't have a chip and PIN or some sort of, you know, more secure system, if it just has the old swipe credit card, and it turns out that credit card purchase was fraudulent, the bank doesn't make it up. The merchant has to eat the shirt. Well, not literally eat it, but eat the cost of the shirt. That's not nice. It also, and the real big problem with that is it removes any incentive from the credit card companies and the banks to fix it. You know, we'll do our part. They say, well, everybody should pay their fair share in fraud. But really the fraud, the reason there is fraud is because the credit card companies haven't done what they need to do to reduce it. They put the chips in. That's great. The next step is to require a four-digit PIN, chip and PIN. That's what most of the rest of the world uses. But here in the United States, we have chip and sign. Now we don't even have sign. So, I don't know. It's a shame because the internet itself was really designed by people who felt, you know, we're thinking that humankind was good and we could trust one another. And so when they built this amazing thing, and the internet is an amazing thing, they didn't really put in a lot of safeguards. When Twitter and Facebook were created, well, I don't know about Facebook. When Twitter was created, you know, they were all about, let's free speech and this will be great. People will be able to, you know, speak truth to power and it'll be free flow of information. And then they underestimated that tiny, what is it, 1%, 1/10 of 1%, whatever it is, that small percentage of humankind that just has no scruples would just take advantage of it and make it a cesspool. And worse, there are nation states that have no scruples. And that's even worse, right? Because then they just march in and they just use it. It's kind of sad. You know, did you know that there is a company, there are actually several companies that make meat that isn't meat? I'm not talking about tofurkies. I'm talking about something that has every bit of the appearance of actual beef, but it's made in a vat. There's one called Impossible Burger. And for a while, I haven't had this, but I have, you know, colleagues that have because we did a segment on it. And, you know, it really looks and tastes like real hamburger. And a few of the upscale restaurants in San Francisco have been selling it and around the country. Now White Castle, the home of the slider, has announced that they're going to start putting Impossible Burgers on their menu. They'll cost a little more. It's cost a little more to make meat than to grow it. But the Impossible Burger, which is made in Oakland, California, the factory there says we can churn out a million pounds of plant-based burger in a month, more than enough to supply White Castle. So White Castle's been around for a long time, almost 100 years, is going to start offering sliders, which are really remarkable, made out of impossible meat. Instead of a dollar, it'll be $1.99 or $6.99 for the combo deal. I want one of you to go in there and try it. Just let me know, will you? White Castle was the first fast food joint. I think so. It's been around since, 97 years, whatever. Do the math, whatever that is. All right. 8888 Ask Leo. TechGuyLabs.com. Your phone calls next. One must rock the Casbah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. I don't know if I can. I see a funny indicator on your microphone, Kim Schaeffer. I'm going to see if I can hear. No, I can't hear you.
Oh, I'm not talking.
Oh, yeah, I can hear you.
I wasn't talking.
You're talking.
Now I'm talking.
That's Kim Schaeffer, ladies and gentlemen, star of our show. Without Kim, there is no radio show.
Because I don't think that's true.
Well, as we've said many times, it would be a very boring show.
It would be boring, but I'm replaceable. Your brain is not.
Oh, I'm hoping it'll be replaceable someday. Do you ever dream, do you ever fantasize about the notion, you're young enough, even though you had a birthday, that perhaps someday in the future, 50 years hence, we'll be able to take the contents of our brains and pour them into some sort of machine and continue to live forever?
No,
I don't. Not at all. Not at all. No.
No, I don't have that.
You want to be in a vat, just floating in a vat?
Doesn't sound appetizing. No.
I think this is something many geeks hope for. But then remember, geeks aren't real comfortable in the world anyway. They don't mind the idea of just being in a vat.
In a jar.
Jar on the shelf.
A brain in a jar.
I actually would but remember, I'm a little older than you, and I'm thinking of, escape plans.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Escaping to where?
As one's body fails, one would look somewhere to put the brain to, hey, assuming, though, that the brain is important. I read a fun sci-fi novel. I interviewed the author, Annalie Newitz, a few weeks ago. It's called Autonomous. And in it, there are autonomous robots that have, and this is only 100 years from now, but have human brains in them that help them be bots. But then they laugh because the brains are not stored in the head. They're stored in the stomach. And they actually are really not very useful. They're only useful for apparently some social niceties. But the company that makes these makes a big deal about how there's a human brain, and they even say where it is, because then the offensive enemy robots will shoot the stomach thinking they're taking out the brain and that robot will be no more useful, and then it laughs. Ha ha, I didn't need that anyway.
Okay.
This all sounds like a bad dream I had last night, doesn't it?
No.
Yeah.
This has gone off the rails.
All right, let's... Irvine Robb says, I'm depressed with all this. Let's talk tech. What do you say?
How about Gloria in Valley Village is having a problem I had when I was a teenager with my landline, where I was getting our local KCBS coming through my phone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And so she's got some kind of interference. And
That radio station, which is here in the San Francisco area, has so much power that you probably get it in your fillings.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi. Thank you, Kim. Hi, Gloria. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
So you're hearing a little tinny radio in the background.
I hope you're sitting down because I'm so far behind the times. It's unbelievable. I have a landline phone.
That's already behind the times. Yes.
Yes. I have also my computer has a modem. And before I disconnected the computer totally, the phone, I guess, and the computer were kind of like running on the same line.
Right.
The phone totally went out about a month ago.
Yeah.
Nothing. I pushed the dial, nothing. So I disconnected the computer, thinking that if I just put the phone into the jack, the phone itself should work by itself.
Right.
Now what I get on the phone is a little static and a radio station.
But can you use it?
I don't get a dial tone.
You don't get a dial tone. Okay. Yeah. So wait a minute. Let me just see if I understand. Let me see if I understand this picture. So you used to have, you know, you have a phone jack in the wall and you used to have a little RJ45 wire that would go from that into the back of your computer. And then your phone was connected into that back of the computer and you could use the phone that way. Is that how it was?
With a modem. Well, actually, I don't have dial-up. I have a modem. So I could use the computer without the phone. But, you know, they were connected in their own way. Also, I could turn on the computer, but I couldn't get internet. I could use it without the internet, just like I can't use the phone. But I could hear my voicemail on the phone. So
okay.
Now all I get is a little static because I've disconnected the computer completely. I get on the phone, I get a little static, and this radio station.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm just still trying to get a picture here. So you have jacks in your wall. Do you have multiple jacks in your home that the phone company put there many, many moons ago?
One on each side of the same wall.
Okay. And that's it in the house? Do you have anything connected like a – so what – the phone should go directly into that jack there with an RJ11. I said RJ11.
What I did, yeah.
Yeah. And there's nothing – there's no – when you get internet service from the phone company, DSL, they give you something called line filters that you put on.
Yes, those have always been connected. And yeah. Nothing has ever gone wrong for the past 10, 15 years.
Well, I don't – okay. So those are going to cause problems if you're not using the phone line for internet. Are you using the phone line for internet?
No.
You're not. Where do you get your internet?
I can turn on the computer without the phone. I can use my landline phone without the computer. I don't have dial-up.
Yeah, but where is it coming from? Is it magic?
Well, I guess because of the modem.
So you have a modem connected
yes.
to the one of the
I have a splitter. I have a modem.
Yeah.
The cable from the computer comes from the modem to the splitter in the jack, in the wall in the jack. And then the wire from the phone, the landline phone, goes into the other part of the splitter, and that goes.
So what you want to try, just this will verify that it's all working, is to take all of that stuff out and plug the phone directly into the wall. Don't have the splitter, and then see if you get.
And that's what I did that, and that's. I figured I took everything out, and I just plugged the phone into the wall by itself, and I thought that I would just.
And at that point, you shouldn't be getting internet anymore. Is that the case?
It's not so much internet. I just want to know if the phone...
No, I know. I understand. But I'm just wondering if you're getting internet when you do that.
No. Well, I can't get internet if the computer...
Yes, that's right. But you haven't tried it. I was just curious.
No, I'm trying to figure out what you mean. Should I take the cable from the modem and plug it into the wall and try to turn on the computer with the internet?
No. I just want to see what's going on. So if you plug your phone... Unplug the computer from the splitter, plug your phone directly into the wall, and you don't get dial tone?
No. I just get this radio station and a little static.
Yeah. So there's something wrong. I can't fix it from here. I think it's a call to the phone company indicated here. I'm just confused. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hold on a sec. Oh my goodness! I'm all confused. So
I'm sorry.
No. I'm going to help you. We're off the air now, but I'm going to still help you. So when you take a regular telephone, you have a regular telephone, right?
Right.
And you plug it into the wall with no splitter or anything, nothing else, just a line from the phone to the wall, and there's nothing connected to any of the other jacks in the house.
Right. That's exactly what I did 2 days ago.
And you pick up the phone, and you don't get phone.
You don't get dial tone. I get the radio station.
Okay.
That's it.
Well, that's just interference because there's nothing on the line. So
when
you plug in the whole doohickey with the splitter and the thing, then you get phone line?
No, I don't get anything. I don't even get static.
Yeah. So what's right. Yes. So you don't have a phone service right now is what you're saying.
AT&T is about it.
But you don't have phone service right now. You can't make a phone call.
No. I'm sorry. No. That's what you meant.
Do you still have internet service when you have everything all connected up?
No.
You don't have that either?
No. See, the phone I can turn on. I mean, the light comes on. With the computer, I can turn the computer on. I can go on the computer as long as I don't go to the internet, because when I try, it says you do not have internet.
Yeah. So this is this. What has happened at this point is somewhere your phone line got cut.
Oh.
So that's why you have no service of all. You don't have internet and you don't have phone. So nothing I can do from here, nothing you can do from there. You have to call the phone company and say, what the heck?
Oh.
When was the last time you got on the internet?
About a month ago.
Yeah. So something's happened in the intervening month. The phone company can fix this. Now, sometimes the way the phone company works, and it just depends on how you're set up, they won't come inside the house. They'll just fix it to the edge of the house and say, whatever has happened inside is your problem. But at least make sure you're getting phone service to the house. If you paid the, 10 cents a month or whatever inside line fee, then they'll come in and fix it from the inside. But the phone company has to fix this. You're not getting internet or telephone. And the reason you're hearing a radio station is there's no load on that. It's just there's nothing going on.
Okay.
You're paying your bill, right?
Yeah, I'm sure I'm going to get a bill soon from both of them, DSL Extreme and AT&T.
Yeah. Yeah, call AT&T because you're not getting any phone, and that's AT&T's on AT&T. And DSL Extreme sits on the AT&T wires, so if you don't get phone, you can't get DSL.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
So both are broken. Start with AT&T.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. I didn't know where to begin after this.
Yes, start with AT&T for sure.
Thank you.
Nice to talk to you. Have a good one. Bye, Gloria.
Bye-bye.
Wow. I think we finally figured it out. She has no phone line. You won't get a dial tone without the splitter? Wait a minute. You should get a dial tone if you take everything out except one phone, one line, an RJ11 plugged into the wall. You get dial tone, right? I don't know what that other guy is talking about. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. So I spent a little more time on the line in the break with Gloria. And it turns out her phone service was cut or off. We can't, DSL, you can't get any internet access if you don't have phone service. The first thing you have to do is have phone service. And then the DSL can ride on it. There is something called an bare line DSL or dry DSL, which is it's hard to get. The phone company doesn't like it, but is internet access without a phone line. It's on the phone line, but without phone service, I guess I should say, without service, without POTS, plain old telephone service. But it's hard to get dry loop connection. You have to talk the phone company into it because they want, basically, the internet's riding on their lines, but they're not getting the money for the phone service, which they kind of count on. Because, it's hard being a phone company these days. Money's tight. Nick in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Great. I love your show. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call.
I was just wondering if you're familiar with DirecTV's Genie 2.
I am not.
The Genie 1, which is a DVR.
Okay.
Yeah, and apparently they put it out last summer. It's weird. It's not a lot of information online about it, but I told them recently that I wanted to get 4K going because I do have a 4K TV. And they said, well, you do have it with the Genie, but the Genie 2 will allow a lot more TVs to have 4K, bigger hard drive, etc. But it's more like a media hub.
Yeah.
It almost looks like an airport extreme.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. They claim that you can get two 4K streams. That is a little bit of a stretch, I would guess, because you're getting it off the DirecTV satellite, right? It's off the satellite.
It's still off the satellite, apparently.
Yeah, how much bandwidth do you get on your satellite?
Good question. I'm not sure as far as my Wi-Fi. I know that, but the actual satellite, I think.
Well, but, what's your Wi-Fi speed?
Outstanding. I got a 300 down and 20.
Really?
Up.
Holy cow. Holy cow. Oh, well, then they could do it. So in order to do, according to Netflix, which is, one of the relevant services because they offer 4K You need 25 megabits for each, 25 megabits per second for each 4K stream. So two of them would be 50 megabits. I thought, oh, man, that's got to be more than he's getting from the satellite. No, but if you're saying you get 300 megabits down,
Yeah, that's like the top tier, used to be Time Warner, now Spectrum Internet.
Oh, wait a minute. Slow down. Yeah. Slow down, buddy.
Okay. Okay.
So you have cable, internet and DirecTV.
No, you know, just the internet for Spectrum, and then satellite is DirecTV. So I just use Spectrum for my internet.
Okay.
Yeah. I do speed tests, and it's there.
Yeah, of course, because you have a cable modem, dude. Is it me? Am I having trouble today? Maybe my brain is in a jar somewhere, and I'm just confused as heck. So the Genie is for your DirecTV, right?
Exactly.
It doesn't connect to the Spectrum cable in any way, does it?
No, it doesn't. Sorry. I just had mentioned my Wi-Fi speed. I thought you were asking that. Completely separate.
So the genie's. I get what you're saying. The Genie is just a DirecTV base station for television viewing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So it's just going to replace.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I don't know anything about that. I would trust DirecTV to guide you as to whether you want it or not. Don't know anything about it. Can't help you on that one. Let me try one more time, and if this doesn't go well, I'm going home. Ezekiel in Lomita, California. Hello, Ezekiel.
Hey,
Ezekiel. It's all on your shoulders now, Ezekiel.
Wow.
Don't go telling me that you've got rabbit ears, but you're getting internet over your Please, just what do you got here?
Just something interesting that maybe somebody in the chat room or you might be able to the ghost in the machine. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh boy, I always get worried when I hear that. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
And then I have another quick question for you about some little mini computers. We're going to donate a bunch of them to a church for a school.
Very thoughtful
to learn and stuff on. And I want your recommendation in that area. Good. But the I have a Samsung that was sent to me. I have my cell phone carrier, and they I was actually looking at a special deal that was going on with another carrier. I don't know. It probably doesn't make any difference to mention names or not. And I called my carrier that I've been with for a long time, and I had already found out that I could transfer my original number that I've had for 20 years over to the other carrier. And they were doing an offer where, pay $45 and you get a free, real nice phone, and you're paying for the first, for the month service, first month service. And so I called my carrier and said, okay, well, give me all my information. I'm going to go to another company. And then I got a call back 5 minutes later. We heard you're going to try to leave us, and we've been authorized to send you a new phone. So they sent me a new phone, a Samsung, actually a real nice one. And I looked it up online. It was like almost $300. I don't know what model it is. And I, in the interim, when they had, while they were sending me the phone, I was able to fix the little ear jack, the 8-inch miniature output, because I couldn't use my earbuds and I couldn't hear anybody on the phone, so I wasn't able to use it. So I had another spare phone that I was just using temporarily. They sent me the Samsung, and I never did transfer it over to my phone account. So it's actually an unactivated phone, but of course with Wi-Fi, my local network at the house, and the network at the office in a warehouse shop area that I work, I'm able to do internet and stream. And, I'm a tech guy, podcast junkie. And are you still there?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. What was the question?
Yeah. The question is why that I haven't activated it. To my account, I'm using it just basically as an MP3 player and to stream online. I can't stream anything but podcasts, and it's not activated. And I found this out by mistake. I was listening to one of your podcasts because I listen to all your stuff, and I'm driving, and I have the thing in my phone, thing in my pocket, and I'm still listening to it, and I'm a half a mile away, and I'm still getting you, and it played through your entire podcast, and I've been doing it every day for months now, and I still keep getting the podcast consistently. If I stop it or I try to to go in and go to a different podcast, I lose it. And I have to go back to my where my network is reachable, and then I have to start over. Why would that be happening when the phone is not activated?
I have no idea.
Isn't that bizarre?
I have no idea what's going on. All right, a couple of things. So that phone has, even if you don't activate it, has Wi-Fi capability. So you can get data. In fact, a lot of people do this. They have a leftover phone and they use it as kind of like an iPod. They use it as they give it to a kid. So that's you know, you're connecting to Wi-Fi, right? You're on a Wi-Fi network at some point.
Yeah. When I get away from my house.
But the problem is you get in the car, it keeps going. Now, remember that there's two ways to listen to our shows. You can stream it, but you can also download it. And if you download it, it will continue to play even if you're not online.
I never download it.
But you're not downloading it. How are you listening to the show?
I just hit the menu. I go to Leo Podcasts, and I click on the one that I want. And
what application?
Through iHeart.
Okay. iHeart must then do some caching because iHeart is nominally streaming. It sounds like what they're doing is they're downloading while you're connected to the Wi-Fi and continuing to play the cached, the saved version of the show until that runs out. At some point, that will. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, I have fortified myself now. I think it's me. It's me. It's me. Right, Kim? It's me. I have fortified myself now with a quadruple shot latte.
You?
Yeah.
I might need one too.
Yeah. I am. I'm a little foggy. Maybe, if they put your brain in a jar, would you know?
No, because you're...
No, you'd probably connect it up so that you felt like you weren't in a jar. So I think that's what happened.
I don't think I've ever laughed so
overnight.
Hard. I've been crying for the last 15 minutes.
All right. Okay, let's see. Can we keep up this roll? Let's keep it going. Line four, Joshua in Victorville. Hi, Joshua. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
I have a question. We have a sorry if it's loud. We have a Black Magic switcher at our church, and we have a Lenovo laptop that we bought about a year ago.
Yeah,
it has a GeForce GTX video card in it.
Nice.
And we're running Easy Worship 6. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it.
Not directly, but I've of course heard of it. Yeah.
Our problem is we're trying to put words on the bottom of the screen with a background behind it that is on top of the live feed, but we can't do it. And according to the things I've seen on Easy Worship and stuff, it says we need a graphics card that has two video outputs.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, what you're trying to do is what in the old days of television we called a chyron, or a lower third, which is most video switchers will do this. We do it on our feeds. It's it's how you see it all the time on TV news. The thing at the bottom. It could be a ticker, but usually it's at least the logo of the company and the name of the person speaking, or maybe, you know, breaking news or whatever. And so that's they call it a lower third, even though it doesn't take up anywhere near a third of the screen.
Yes, sir.
It uses some specialized in the old days of TV, it used some specialized hardware. In fact, that was the brand name, Chyron, Chryon, yeah, that would superimpose this. So you're doing it now on a PC in software. The Black Magic switcher, tell me about that. Which one are you using?
You know, I'm sitting here. I know he laid the paperwork out for me, and I can't find it.
Yeah, that's all right.
We got it because I've been listening to you for quite a long time.
Yeah, we like Black Magic a lot.
You suggested it, and we got it. And for whatever reason, now I can't find...
That's okay. It's... So generally, the switcher is where that will happen, and the switcher will merge those two together. We use something from a company called NewTek called a TriCaster for our video switcher, and it does it all together. In the old days of TV, of course, it was two different units. I don't know if that has to do with the Easy Worship software is kind of a presentation tool, right?
Yes, sir.
It's like kind of like PowerPoint.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Okay, but it doesn't do switching, right? Or does it?
No, I think it has that capability, but No, it severely lagged the computer down.
Yeah, that's a lot of work. I'm just looking at it. It does support the TriCaster, so you could use it to put kind of rich media into your feed. You shouldn't need to. I'm even looking. It has what they call alpha channel video on the yeah. Easy Worship, and that's for that is basically the lower third coming up.
The Easy Worship side, it says you need to connect two video outputs.
Yeah, that would make sense because one of them is the. Is doing the lower third, and one of them's doing the main picture.
I have the black magic box in front of me, but I can't. All it says is.
Is it an ATEM?
HD.
Is it the?
Yes, it is ATEM.
It's the ATEM. Okay, those are very nice, very affordable switchers. They also, or at least in theory, have this capability. But unfortunately, it's difficult for me to.
Since you're not familiar with it?
Well, it sounds like you got two things that do the same thing. What are you using the Easy Worship stuff for? Just putting up graphics and things?
Graphics. Yeah, mainly graphics.
Yeah. The ATEM would not require the computer at all. The ATEM can do, the Blackmagic should be able to do the switching. In other words, switch from one camera to another. It's a little TV studio in a box, in a fairly affordable box. And the idea is they can switch the cameras, but it should also be able to put up the lower thirds, the titles. So
we can do stuff like that, but we do I can't think of the way to put it, but basically like it's not all pre-programmed. It's kind of on the fly, words on the fly, like Bible scripture, stuff like that.
Yeah,
so everything's on. There's a lot of on the fly, and from what I was reading in the ATEM switcher, everything has to be pre-programmed. It looks like.
I see. Well, it does. Yeah. I mean, you could have, and we do this all the time. All of our stuff is pre-programmed, but I can on the fly edit it. You just need four hands.
Yeah.
So I see. So you want the Easy Worship will pull scripture and things like that and insert it into the video. Is that's what you'd want to use the Easy Worship to do? I get it.
I just wasn't sure if there was.
What you're gonna do? Yeah, no, I don't think so. What you want to do is you're running the Easy Worship software on the Lenovo laptop. You want to treat the laptop as just another camera.
And that's what we do.
Yeah. So you've got the preacher. You've got maybe another shot of the preacher, maybe a shot of the congregation. So you got a couple of camera shots. And one of those camera shots is the Easy Worship. And what you want to do is make the Easy Worship, whatever's coming from the Easy Worship, to be an alpha channel. It has to be transparent on top of the other picture. You want to mix the two together. And that would be a capability in the ATEM. So what you're looking for, and again, I'm not an expert in this, so I'm just giving you the general overview of this. But what you're looking for is a way to mix two images into one. And that's it may be that the switcher you have is not powerful enough or advanced enough to do that. It's something, most switchers can kind of do. It just depends on the capabilities. If you have a T-bar or something like that, you might be able to move two images in. I'm not familiar enough with the interface, but I can do it on a TriCaster with a little T-bar interface that mixes the two images together. And one way to look at it is it's the same T-bar that you use to switch from camera one to camera two. You can also use it to mix two images together. I'm not an expert in this, but I am sure that the workflow is going to be is you use the Easy Worship to generate the scripture or whatever you want to put in the picture, and you use the Black Magic to overlay it on top of the picture. So what you need to do is look at your Black Magic manual and look at how you would do that. Overlay one image on top of another. It may say lower third. It may say Chiron. It may not say anything like that at all. In fact, really conceptually, it's not. It's just overlaying one picture on top of another. But it's, you know, it's really interesting. Many, many churches now are doing this kind of fairly high-end video production. It's kind of cool. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Well, it can create an alpha channel. So you take it as an alpha channel. Right. And put it. Yeah. The ATEM has downstream keys.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's what I don't know if you're, is he still on the line? Are you still on the line? Yes.
Yeah, I'm right here, sir.
Yeah. So you're going to make the scripture or the passage or whatever it is you're doing in Easy Worship, make that an alpha channel. Cause I see Easy Worship does support that. That means it's transparent. The whatever it is has no background. Right. And then that's a what they call a downstream key on the ATEM, right? So that or a DSK, something that's what the TriCaster calls a DSK, downstream key. So what you're going to look for in the ATEM is, you know, you've got your Easy Worship plugged into line 4 or whatever it is, camera 4. Make that camera the downstream key, and you should be able to then. I'm not familiar with the ATEM interface, but there's a button somewhere that would say overlay.
Does he have a control surface?
Do you have a control surface, or are you doing it on a computer?
On a computer. Well, it's on the computer. We just use the on the front of the ATEM. It actually has all the buttons and such. We use that as well, but there's no actual control panel, no. And we do have, I think the way it's set up is like whenever we click on air, it puts the overlay on it. Because I think the Easy Worship's already in Alpha Channel. When we click on air, it then puts just the words on top of the on whatever we're doing. But it only does the words. The graphics, like if we want graphics behind it, so it to kind of give it a background instead of the live. Jumbled up background.
Yeah,
it doesn't do that. We were doing something yesterday. You can see it starts to do it, and then the graphics start to come up and then stops.
Yeah, I don't think you need a second video card. I think what you got to do is go look in your Blackmagic manual. And there's two things they have: what they call upstream keys, which lets you layer live action. and then there's downstream keys, which lets you add lower thirds, bugs, and logos. And you can decide which is more appropriate. But you want to read those particular parts of that manual because that's okay. What you're doing. You're using the keyer, which the ATEM has. All ATEM switchers have keying. And the keying is what takes the alpha channel, the transparent image from the worship program, and superimposes that on the image coming from one of the cameras. So I'm even looking at the Blackmagic ATEM page under features. If you just want to see what their language is that they're using, you can read up here, and it'll be in the manual on how you do this. This is exactly what you're talking about. It's designed to do exactly this.
That'll help out greatly because we're just trying to get it.
I understand it's confusing, and you know you've been thrown into this. You've got to be and I'll tell you what, Scissor Fight in our chat room has given us a video on YouTube that shows how to do it. You know, you can learn anything you ever wanted to know. There's a YouTube video on it.
I've been looking a lot.
I bet you have.
I was probably searching it wrong.
Yeah. So let me tell you, the channel is VI Rental Tech.
And it's like as in Delta?
V as in Victory. Victory. Oh. Info Rental Tech. And it's this, the video title is Blackmagic Design ATEM Software Control 2. And then DSK and DSK Tie, which is downstream keyer. So that's this is how you do it. And that video might turn on a light bulb for you.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate your info. I've listened to you for a long time. I've gotten a lot of very good info, and based on what you were saying before about Flash Magic, we actually went that way because it was
good. And it's very affordable, and I think they do very, very good work. You look at the TriCaster, which is a solution we use, and you're talking tens of thousands of dollars, but the ATEMs are much more affordable. You can also Google Blackmagic ATEM Lower Third for YouTube. There's a video there. There's a number of videos on this. This is not an easy thing to do, and a lot of people are confused, so I think you'll find a lot of help there. Good luck. Have fun. All right. Anytime. Take care. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, all that jazz. We've had some interesting calls in the last hour, but we'll see where we can go from here. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number if you want to talk tech. Anything with a chip in it, 888-827-5536. The website techguylabs.com has answers to all the questions. And if you're listening and you're going, oh, I know how to do that, help me, please. Go to the website. It's free. There's no sign up. And you can leave your comments. We divide the Tech Guy Labs site up into shows. This is episode 1480. We divide each show up into hours, 1, 2, and 3, and each hour into calls or segments. So you can drill down right to the last call of the first hour on episode 1480 and leave a comment there. Now, we don't require signups, of course, to visit the site or search the site. We don't ask for any information. But to prevent spam, we do ask that you log in either to Twitter or Google or Facebook or some account just to establish that you're not a spammer. That helps us control the content of the comments. But those comments are more than welcome. And, of course, there's never a charge to read or to comment. TechGuyLabs.com. It is with some trepidation that I press the button and say hello to Karen in Diamond Bar. Hello, Karen.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
Well, I have a conundrum here, and I'm hoping you could help me. Several months ago...
I'm the king of conundrums so far.
Well, I think this is an important alert for people who use AOL, and that's most of the people over like 60 or something like
that.
Yeah. So I went on AOL, and it said that they were now going to charge, and I had to press this button to upgrade, and I didn't do that. But I then... was able to get through to my AOL on Chrome, but that stopped also. I was able to, it'll say, you've got mail, but the screen that would come up was one with ads and I couldn't ever see my mail. So I kind of let it go for a couple of months. And then most recently I thought I got to get this fixed. So I went online and it said it was going to be like, several hours before I could get a hold of somebody to talk to, or to do the online thing. And then I found a number. And I called this number, and I was so delighted. I got a live person. I was really excited. And he sounded very legitimate. He went on my computer. He said there were 2,641 events through the administrator, and they were from foreign people, as in North Korea.
Yeah, that's bogus, right?
I know, but it was an 800 number on the internet. So then...
There you go. That's proof. Where did you get the 800 number? Did you Google it, or did it... Where did you get the 800 number?
Well, I think I Googled it, to be able to get to connect with them.
Yeah. So if I'm a bad guy,
yeah.
What I'll probably do is create a bunch of web pages that look good, look real, look like they may even be AOL support, and they have phone numbers to call.
Yeah.
Because I know that people like you are going to say, what's going on? And Google AOL support. And, if I'm really good at what I do, I might be able to get that AOL support to show up at the top of that search engine.
Yeah.
And you call that number. And then the guy says, oh, AOL's, it's AOL support on the line. What can I do to help you? And you say, well, something's gone wrong. Oh, let me check. Give me access to your PC. Actually, the first thing they do is they say launch something called the Event Viewer. And this is what they did to you. And then they say in the event. Yeah. And then the event viewer shows all of these exclamation marks and yellow triangles and sometimes even red X's. And they say, do you see maybe, I don't know, but do you see a bunch of red X's there? Oh, yes, I do. Oh, yes, that's very bad. Very, very bad. You have been attacked from North Korea. That's a new one. I haven't heard that one yet.
Yeah.
But that's Event Viewer is showing you that harmless. Harmless, harmless, harmless. All Event Viewers have red X's, yellow triangles, and exclamation marks. That's normal. There's no, that's no sign of intrusion.
Under the Windows System 32, CMDEXE.
Oh, he got you to run that, did he?
Yes, and network at risk. Network at risk.
Yeah. Yeah, how did he get you to get the network at risk to show up?
Did
he give you a command to type?
I think he typed in all the commands.
Oh, he typed in all the commands. Oh, even better. Yeah. So you have you gave him access to your machine so he could fix it, right? But you understand.
But he wanted to charge me to fix it. Now maybe he's laid some eggs in there that I don't.
Well, like. Exactly. Once you give a unknown third party access to your machine, all bets are off because the guy's already. We know he's a scammer.
Yeah.
So we don't know how, you know, this is what I was talking at the beginning of the show. Most people are trustworthy. You're a nice person. You assume the person there to help you. But what you don't understand, what none of us really understand, is that there are these people. Where did they come from who have no scruples, no morals, no ethics, and they're out to take advantage of people? Shame on them. When they call me, by the way, that's the first thing I say. I say, does your mother know that you are scamming people? Shame on you. That's when they hang up on me very quickly.
Yeah.
So your question, of course, now is, well, what do I do?
Yeah, what do I do? I would like to somehow transfer my mail from AOL, but maybe now my computer's at risk because of
So this probably does not affect your AOL, although one of the things this guy could have done if he'd wanted to is get into your AOL account and start sending spam and stuff like that. So you'll want to look at your AOL account and probably change the password and make sure that look at the sent mail. Make sure that none of the sent mail is.
But I can't see my mail. I haven't been able to access my mail for months.
Yeah, because you said there's big ads. There's big ads in front of it.
Well, it's actually a small ad in the blank page. Okay. And when I go through the AOL app itself, I can't get through.
So you're not using a browser to go to AOL.com. You're using the AOL application.
Both of them, I have not.
Both the same problem.
Yeah. Not the same problem, but the bottom line is I can't access my mail.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's possible that this guy only was kind of a medium format scammer. And merely wanted the $300 to fix your machine, and so was merely trying to convince you that you needed the fixing and that he was going to fix it. Maybe he was just kind of only slightly unscrupulous, but we don't know.
Yeah.
Once somebody has access to your machine, we don't know. He could. I mean, I doubt he's done this, but I'm just going to say he could put something on there that's got. You know, capturing all your keystrokes, turning on your camera and your microphone at will, and all sorts of things.
Yeah, that's scary.
Yeah, I don't blame you. So now you really don't have much choice, I'm sorry to say. What you need to do is to back up your data. This is really important.
Okay.
So you want to get your data off of that computer. I hope you've been backing it up all along. But if not, this is an occasion to do so. You might want to get an external drive and copy just the stuff you really need off of there. I hope you have all your passwords somewhere recorded.
Yes.
Yep. Bookmarks, don't forget those. And, of course, any documents that you created. Put those on a separate drive. And now you're going to, what you really need to do, and I hate to say this, but it's the only solution, is to wipe the machine. You need to start over. You need to nuke it from space. How old is the machine?
Oh, it's probably 4 years old, 5 years old, maybe.
Okay. You might ask your son, hey, did you get any discs with this machine for system recovery? In the old days, they used to give you CDs or DVDs with the operating system.
I've been through this with him. He doesn't have that.
Doesn't have them. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a Windows 7 machine, 8, 10?
It's a 7.
Okay.
And I've upgraded it to 10.
Oh, good. Okay. Here's the good news. You can go to Microsoft.com, don't get it from anyone else, and get the get the Windows 10 installer. Because you have installed and authenticated Windows 10 on that machine, that's all you need. Okay. And you can reinstall Windows 10. Actually, Windows 10 has recovery options. You might look at the, hit the Windows key and type recovery. We got to take a break. I'll walk you through this in the during the break, though. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'll walk you through this. You can hit the Windows key and type recovery, and you'll see there are options to what they call reset this PC.
Okay.
And it's good that you have Windows 10 on here. Microsoft has really improved this since Windows 7. So Windows.
I'm going to leave all the programs that are on here.
Yeah. Well, there's two kinds of resets. There's one that keeps your data and one that erases your data.
Okay.
But it's going to, and you kind of want it to do this, erase all the programs no matter what.
Really? Okay.
I know that's a big pain. Yeah. But there's really no reliable way to go through your machine and find anything he might have done. And we're being overcautious here. We really are. Because
I can appreciate that.
Yeah, sometimes you want to, right?
Yeah, but let me ask you this. Okay, so, you know, are they, you know, I had heard that AOL was going to be charging for their service. I had heard that. So I wasn't so surprised a couple months ago when the screen said that they're upgrading. Do you think that's when I got infected?
Possibly. Very likely, yes.
Are people paying for AOL these days?
Yeah, they have Gold, AOL Gold, but they also have a free AOL plan. They still have that.
Oh, okay.
The problem is AOL was sold to Verizon.
Oh, God.
Say no more.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
At that point, it would be a good idea to, pack up your bags and move along.
Yeah, I will do that then. I appreciate this. But, you know, it's good to have people know this AOL stuff. You know, it really looked legitimate. You know, I'm 71.
Well, let me tell you the truth. The best thing to do is to not use Windows anymore. To be honest with you,
really, what should I use?
Well, the reason is that Windows is a very powerful general purpose operating system, and because it's so general, it's easily manipulated. By bad guys as well as by good guys. It's very powerful. But I think for most people, it's more than you need. Because I'm going to guess that you pretty much do email, maybe some web browsing, online shopping, that kind of thing, right?
No, I actually still work and I do online reviews. I'm a physician.
Nice. So you do those reviews in specialized software or?
No, I use Excel. I use Word.
Okay. You can,
I use their software that I get from the agency.
That's the tricky one. So all of those things that you just mentioned, up until that point where you use custom software, you could do on something like a Chromebook, which is what I usually recommend.
Okay.
99% of users would be happy with a Chromebook because it's much more secure. It'll do all the things that you do, except for that agency sends you special software to use, huh?
Well, no, I can install it. That's not so much the problem.
Well, you can't install it on a Chromebook. That's the issue. You have to have Windows, probably. Does it say it requires Windows?
I'm not sure. I think they use Apple technology, too, so I don't think it's...
Well, Apple will be no better for you, only slightly better. Really, in both cases, a powerful operating system requires you to become a security expert.
Can I ask you another question, if you have enough time?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I got about 40 seconds.
Okay, all right. So I loved Office, and I love the older versions, the brand new one. It's very hard to see visually. It's not very good, so I like the older Office.
Right.
And I have it on here. That's the one I don't want to lose, because the only thing that I use with that is their contacts, and I use it almost like a file drawer for my memory. So I have all kinds of little trivia on that, not addresses, but... symptoms of this particular disease.
Oh, you're going to need really a technology makeover.
There's nothing like that.
I know. I have to run. I really do. I'm sorry to say.
Okay.
But this is more complicated than I wish it were easier. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Yeah, last year AOL ended its free service. If you want to use the AOL software, you have to pay $4 a month for AOL Gold. And in my opinion, that is the signal to pack up and move. You don't need AOL Gold. Now, I spent some more time talking with Karen. She's a physician, and she needs some specialized software. But most people, unless you're using some special software, if you're just doing the typical computer stuff, email, online stuff, you know, shopping, banking, surfing, checking the news, simple word processing, spreadsheets, for the stuff that I would say 90% of computer users do, Windows and Mac are really overpowered. They're too much. And the problem with something that overpowered is it has more capabilities, which means bad guys can mess with you. Because also there are 2 billion Windows users, the bad guys go right after Windows. You know, if you'd been on a Mac and the bad guy would say, well, open the event viewer or type CMD, you would have said, well, what are you talking about? I don't have that. And he would have hung up because he said, oh, I don't hack Macs. Not that you can't. It's just, you know, it's too small a market to make it worth his while. The best thing to do for most people is to get a Chromebook. You've probably heard about Chromebooks because they're going gangbusters in schools. This is the dominant platform in school, but it's a great platform for everybody because it's not a general purpose operating system. It's a much simpler operating system with security for in the forefront. If you're a Windows or Mac user, bad news. You need to become a security expert. You need to learn how to protect yourself. You need to understand that when somebody, you know, you call an 800 number you found on the internet and a guy asks you to launch Event Viewer or the command line and says, let me take control of your computer, you need to understand that something bad is happening. If you need to call for support, you shouldn't be using Windows or Mac because support is non-existent these days. You should be using a Chromebook. Now, unfortunately, Karen is because she's a physician, she needs to use some specialized software that I think only runs on Windows and Mac. And that's really the only compelling argument, in my opinion, and I know people yell at me when I say this, but the only compelling argument, in my opinion, is if you have to use software that only runs on Windows and Mac, if you have to, if you must, I'm not talking about a browser. I'm not talking about Microsoft Office. I'm saying if you have to use specialized software for your job or for your home, or maybe you're a photographer and you just have to have Adobe Lightroom, then you're going to have, but there's a burden on you when you do that. You can't just blithely go out and get a Windows PC or even a Macintosh and say, well, I'm just going to use this and everything's fine. You have a responsibility now, not just to yourself, because if you get hacked, you impact the rest of the world. The bad guys can do stuff to your computer that affects other people. You're spreading viruses. You could be used in attacks. All of this. Unfortunately, it's even true of things like Internet of Things devices, cameras, routers, microwave ovens, video doorbells. All of these things require you to get some expertise in security to protect yourself and protect the rest of the Internet. It's a burden. So I tell a lot of people, get a Chromebook, get an iPad. iPad's fine, too. It's a little pricier. It's also a little more limited. And, you know, but an iPad's fine, too. These more modern devices are designed with security in first and foremost, and that makes a big, big difference. And you don't need to be a security expert to use those. So if you can do what you want to do on an iPad or a Chromebook, please do me a favor. Do the world a favor. Do yourself a favor, most importantly. They're less expensive. They're very powerful. They're great. iPad, or preferably, in my opinion, a Chromebook. A couple hundred bucks. And just use that for everything. Maybe you do need to use a Windows program sometimes, as Karen does. You keep that Windows machine around for that, but use the Chromebook for everything else. That's fine. That's not a bad idea. But you could hear the problem here because, you know, it just got deeper and deeper. And once she called a number, you know, that wasn't an AOL number and asked a guy for support and gave the guy access to her computer, she now has a problem. Now, if that had been a Chromebook and he had somehow gotten into it, Chromebooks have a feature called Power Wash. It takes a minute. It resets the entire thing. And because most of what you do on a Chromebook is online, you log into your Google account and you're back up and running. Everything's there. It's all working again. even if the worst happened, you got some, let some, you know, nasty person into your computer, you could get back to golden fast. Karen now has to go through a very arduous process of getting her data off of the computer, finding all the apps she needs, wiping the computer, reinstalling Windows. She can, fortunately, she's on Windows 10, so that's a little bit easier than it used to be. Nuking it, you know, just tearing it down to the foundation and building it all up again. That's a weekend shot for sure. And there's nothing to say that tomorrow something bad couldn't happen. AOL is not your friend. Verizon is not your friend. Frankly, no computer company really is your friend. You can't count on support anymore. I think a Chromebook is just a good way to go. It was really created to solve this problem. So investigate whether you can do what you need to do on a Chromebook. Increasingly, this is going to be the case. Chromebooks now support Android, the Android Play Store. I don't necessarily recommend that because that adds now to the security issues, potential security issues. So you might not use that unless you have to. But what you're seeing is more and more applications are web-based that they don't require any particular operating system. We're really facing a new era in computing. Even Microsoft, with its recent reorganization, has kind of acknowledged the fact. It's hard for Microsoft. They made all of their money on Windows and then secondarily Microsoft Office. And now they're trying to survive in a brand new world where the operating system doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. And Windows is no more important than anything else. What matters is the cloud. What matters is the browser. And Microsoft is way behind in that technology. They used to own browsers. Now Google does with Chrome. But to their credit, they're really reinventing themselves. And I think the world is recognizing that it's not a Windows versus Mac world anymore. And most of what you do is going to be online. Microsoft and Google and to a lesser degree Apple have gotten behind something they call progressive web apps, which really mean that a website can do everything a program can do. And that soon on your Chromebook, you'll go to a program, a website, and it will be a Lightroom. Even Adobe is modifying Lightroom on its way to becoming a internet-first program. That's how it all is going to be. And, you know, the slowest, the last thing will be the kind of specialized program that Karen's using as a physician. We call these vertical markets where they have a very narrow slice of the market. And these programs are expensive. They don't get updated very often. And so they're the least likely to get shifted over to a web interface. But all the mainstream programs will be rapidly shifted over that way. Right now, you can do Office on the web. No problem. All right. I'm enough preaching. It is Sunday. But I'm going to get down from my pulpit and get ready to talk photography. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, is just around the corner. And I will continue to take calls after that at 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the Right Reverend Tech Guy. More of your calls coming up. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, do you know Tuesday is tax day? Oy, 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 oy. Are you ready? I'm ready. I actually still have one more tax return to do. I kind of, last minute Leo, right? But I relax now because I use TurboTax, and it's a snap. I did my mom's taxes. It was really fun on TurboTax. And I'm taking advantage of this new feature from TurboTax that I really like called TurboTax Live. So if you have not yet done your taxes or you've started and you're getting confused, let me tell you about TurboTax Live. TurboTax Live helps you file online with confidence. I know it's Tuesday, but literally it takes no time to file. It takes no time to do the taxes. TurboTax does all the work, the data entry even in many cases. You just, you know, log in and get stuff from various investment accounts and banks. And so there's less error because you're not keying in numbers. And this is the new feature. With TurboTax Live, you can get a personal review of your tax return from a CPA or an EA. I know a lot of people who use TurboTax but maybe aren't confident that they're doing it right, maybe just want a little more reassurance. TurboTax Live. You can quickly connect to a tax expert via one-way video. They don't see you. You see them as often as you need for answers and advice on your taxes. You can even have the expert review your taxes before you file, make any necessary changes, give you the confidence. Yeah, you did it right. And it's, of course, always backed by a 100% accuracy guarantee. So you file with complete confidence. I am a huge fan. I've used TurboTax my whole life. I'm turning my kids on to it now. In fact, it's Abby's tax, my daughter's tax return I have to do. And I'm waiting so she can sit next to me so she can see how easy. That's actually, I've started it, but I want to back out and say, okay, now watch what we do so that next year she can do it. TurboTax is a family tradition. TurboTaxLive.com/tech guy. Check it out. If you haven't done your taxes yet, just a couple of days left. By the way, you can also file for an extension right through the software. TurboTaxLive.com/tech guy. And with e-file, it was so easy. Got the refund and everything. It's fast. I love it. TurboTaxLive.com/tech guy. We thank TurboTax for their support. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That magic music means it's time for Chris Marquardt. He joins us each week to talk about photography. He's a professional photographer who also is a great teacher. You'll find his workshops at discoverthetopfloor.com and his podcast, which is free and available to all in both English and German. But the English version is at Tips from the Top Floor, TFTTF.com. You know, maybe it's easier just to go to Discover the Top Floor. You'll find links to everything there. Chris, I don't know if I can hear you. I seem to be having some sort of technical difficulty. So I'll tell you what, now that I've given you a big plug, let's go to the phones and we'll see if we can get Chris up at another point in the show. We'll keep working on that. Meanwhile, line three, Neil in Phoenix, Arizona. Hello, Neil. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you? Thanks for calling.
Listen, my pleasure. Just a quick comment, then I'll get to the question real quick, and that is, you kind of alluded to it, I kind of switched from the Mac to the iPad myself, because I'm all in the Apple universe, so I have the iPhone, the HomePod, the AirPods, and I felt the better choice was the MacBook, or that of the Mac Pro, AirPad.
The iPad Pro, yeah. You have the 10.5-inch or the 12.9-inch?
10.5. The other one looked huge.
It is. And in fact, I bought the 12.9 when it first came out, and I felt like I was carrying a pizza box around. It was just too big. So I gave it to one of my colleagues, and I use the 10.5 all the time. And with the pencil, did you get the pencil?
I did. I don't draw much, but I have it just in case and use it a couple of times.
I use it a lot for sketching and note taking. And I'm not an artist by any means, but it's a handy input device. I really think Apple. And this is somewhat a controversial opinion, but I think Apple's moving away from Mac and toward iOS. And ultimately, I think that's where Apple's going to land. So
I
completely agree.
For simple, you know, it's simple. Yeah. I did my taxes on it. It's great.
You know? Yeah, you could do your look. If you can do your taxes on something, that's pretty good, right?
Right. My question, though, has to relate to your comment last week. You were talking the virtues of getting your own domain for your email.
Yes.
And I thought that sounds great. I've actually done that before, although I didn't like the domain name. It's my first and last name. It's too complicated and too long to type, so I hate to use it. But now I've got three domains, potentially a Gmail domain, the other domain in my own name, and then a me.com address.
Right.
I'd like to be able to bring them over to, say, Fastmail with a brand new domain of my own, but I'm trying to think of an easy way to do all of that, to merge everything over the easiest way, and that's what I was calling about.
Yeah. So the idea, this is maybe a black diamond tip, you know, kind of an advanced tip, but I think worth at least thinking about the idea of having a domain name that you own, which is easy to do. I mean, they cost, you know, roughly $10 a year, means that you control it. You know, you own it, you control it. So I have a number, I have leolaporte.com, for instance. That means it's mine. You know, Facebook can't take it away from me. Twitter can't. It's mine. And if I want to get email, I don't want to necessarily run an email server. In fact, I know I don't. You don't. No one should. Leave that to the experts. What you can do is you can say, use somebody's email server. The Google server's free at gmail.com. Or I've mentioned Fastmail. That's the one I use. That's a paid service. They'll provide the email services for you. But then you can attach your unique domain name to it. And there are a variety of different ways to do it. Generally, the people you buy the domain name from, that's called a registrar, whether it's GoDaddy or Hover or Dotster. There's many, many of them. Almost all of them will have some form of email forwarding service, usually inexpensively, $5 a year. So for around $14 a year, you can have all your mail go to you know, let's, for sake of argument, neil@phoenix.net. And all your mail would go there, and you tell everybody, and you put that on your business cards and everything. But what you, what they don't know is that's just kind of a forwarding address, and it will bounce it to wherever you want. And the nice thing is, if someday you say, you know, I want to use this new Proton Mail in Switzerland, it's just changing the forwarding address, and so nobody ever needs know that you're, you've changed your, how you do your mail. Now, your question is the next step, which is, I have mailboxes all over. What I want, what you're saying you want, is a unified inbox, right? You want all that mail from me.com and Gmail to filter into one inbox, correct?
That's right.
Yeah.
So, exactly. So I can give it out once and be done with it.
Yep. And that's a good thing to do, because it's an, also an interim strategy, because you've given out these other addresses in the past. Maybe old friends still have it. That way you don't miss any mail. And especially if they're free accounts like me.com is from Apple and gmail.com is from Google, you can keep that going forever and you'll never miss any mail. So almost all the emails. So now understand, we're adding this extra piece here, which is an email provider, an email server. And Fastmail is the one you're looking at. It's the one I use. I love them. Almost all of these, Google does this too, will have a facility for you to set it up to go out and get your mail, to create a unified inbox. So you set it up on Fastmail. You say, okay, and by the way, every 5 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever you want, go and see if there's any new mail for me at Gmail and me.com and the other places, and collect it in my inbox. In fact, you can even set up, if you wish, filters that say, if the mail is coming to Neil at neil.me, put it in this folder. If it's coming to Gmail, put it in this folder. If you wish, you don't have to do that. So you can actually create multiple folders in your new email, your shiny new email service at fastmail.com, for each of the mail servers that you have been using. Does that make sense?
So yes, it does. Yeah. Yeah. So I want to get it into one, get the one, get everyone to use one email or one.
Eventually, yeah, you'll give out this, you know, neil@phoenix.net address from now on, but you'll still be able to get mail from all the other places as long as you want. And it'll all show up at your Fastmail account. And then for you, you don't log into neil@phoenix.net. There's nowhere to log into. That's not a mail server. It's just a forwarding address. You'll log into Fastmail. They have apps for iOS and Android. They have a web interface. Almost all email servers now have web interfaces. And you can use Outlook or mail.com on your Mac, whatever, or Apple Mail, rather, on your Mac, whatever it is that you like to use. I use some pretty arcane email programs like MailMate on the Mac and Claws Mail. They'll all work with your new setup. Fastmail supports IMAP, which is a modern form of email server, and everything will work with it. So they'll go out and they'll get your mail, and you'll have it on your local machines. You can actually, I have different mail programs. Doesn't matter, because they're all getting the same, you know, mail from Fastmail. Does that all make sense?
Yeah,
iOS. Fastmail has a great iOS app, but you can use iOS's mail to get your Fastmail as well. Because they use a standard protocol, IMAP. Yeah, this is a little more advanced, but it is definitely the best way to go. And another advantage of doing this is that you can really set up filters. I have Fastmail, and almost any good email provider will have a good filtering system. This is the next level if you want to really improve your email. That going to the next level means setting up sophisticated filtering, because a lot of email isn't useful. I've mentioned this before. If I see the word unsubscribe, if my filter sees the word unsubscribe in an email, I put it in a special folder called newsletters, because almost always that means it's a newsletter. If I see the mail comes from mom, I put that in the VIP folder. If the mail is, if I'm CC'd on email, if I'm not the main addressee, I put that in another folder. So you can use these filter rules to organize your folders and make it a lot easier for you to, in effect, it's triaging your email before you look at it, so that everything's pre-organized, and you can use it, of course, to get rid of spam so you don't see. I see very little junk mail now because of fairly elaborate filtration systems that I've set up. Fastmail is one of many providers. It's one I use. I really like them. But I still have a Gmail address. I still have addresses at Yahoo and lots of other places, and I just collect mail from all of those places and put them in one inbox so I can get them easily. All right, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. More calls still to come.
You can never have too much Paul Simon, can you? Kodachrome, once again, that signals it's time for We Fix the Audio Problem. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. Hi, Chris. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com. You know, the miracle of it, though, really, is that you are in Germany. We don't say this all the time, but you're at the Viewfinder Villa in Germany, where it is in the middle of the night, and you're talking to me via Skype, and it sounds like you're in studio with me. Because you have a good microphone, you have lots of bandwidth. It's really amazing.
It's amazing, yeah. It's totally amazing. So I guess my computer just hates me because I just spent 2 days in Berlin in a workshop. I was holding a workshop on film photography, so I was not using any computers, any digital equipment. Oh. Well, my smartphone, okay, but that doesn't count.
The bits are mad.
Probably. Yep. Now, the interesting thing, the thing we did over the weekend was the workshop was called Film Extreme, which means we're doing stuff with film that was not the norm. I mean, you would if there's a certain amount of people still out there shooting film or rediscovering it, and that normally involves getting a couple of rolls of film, an old used camera, maybe you found one from your grandfather or something, and shoot those and then get them developed. But that's the plain old way of doing things. And we did a few things that are kind of wild and extreme when it comes to film. The first one was we shot wildly expired film.
Now what the heck does that do?
Well, if you have a roll of film and it has a use before date or a sell before date, but that doesn't mean the film goes bad when it ages. But especially color film ages in interesting ways, because we have they use like organic colors in there, and those organic colors age. They fade over time. You know how you have these old photos that lose some colors and turn all magenta or blue or get a pink tint or something?
Yeah.
The same happens to old film. Now you might have like part of the colors go away, and you get really interesting, unexpected results. So there's a lot of like surprise potential in there. So if you find a roll of film somewhere that's, I don't know, 20 years old, don't throw it away. Use it. You might be really surprised as to the cool looks that you can get with that.
Oh, that's fun. Okay, what else did you do weird?
Well, the second weird thing we're doing was called cross-processing. So, you know, there's two kinds of color film, slide film and negative film.
Yeah.
The negative film is where you get prints, and the slide films, well, makes positive images. Mm-hmm. But those are pretty much the same films. They are just processed in different chemistry. And what you do when you cross-process is you take a negative film and processes it in slide chemistry or vice versa. And that does a few really interesting things, especially when it comes to contrasts and colors. If you Google the words cross-processing and look at the image results, you get a lot of interesting looking images that look like they have the wildest filters on them. But it's a completely analog process that gives you really interesting looks, really fun looks of your pictures.
Neat.
Okay, next thing.
Yes.
Lots of digital photographers, especially if you have like a camera with a very small sensor, like a smartphone camera, or maybe something with a bigger sensor, like a Micro Four Thirds camera, doesn't really still get to what we call the full frame. And a lot of people look at that, but it's kind of not affordable. Well, with film, you can, because an SLR that you might get used for $20, or you find one in your parents' basement, those are full frame. And you can get medium format cameras, which are kind of totally out of reach for most people when it comes to digital medium format.
These are huge sensors. One of those old Rolleiflexes. Isn't that a medium
format?
Yeah,
that is medium format. And this is absolutely in reach if you shoot film, and it's not expensive to do so. You will still be able to get film. You can buy it. You can still get it processed. That's available.
Let me just be the skeptic. Although I've been through this with you many times, and I do have a Leica M3, which is a work of art camera from 1956, and a Rolleiflex from 1956, and you can still get the film, which is remarkable. But then you have to find a processor. You don't process your own film, do you?
No. You can send them in. The usual places, the usual suspects will still process film. You can still bring it to the drugstore around the corner.
Yeah, actually, yeah, the camera store in town.
Send it into a lab for you.
Yeah, they'll do it.
They will do that. No problem.
So then what do you do? Because now you have negatives.
Well, get them printed. They will do the processing for you. If you tell them this is cross-processed film, they will do that for you.
Okay.
Or if you have medium format film, they will be able to do that for you and get you prints.
Nice.
One more thing. Do we have time for one more?
Please.
Red scale film.
Again,
Google red scale film. Look at the results. It's pretty much the same as color negative film, but the film is reversed. You send light through the film from the wrong side, and that again produces an interesting color shift towards the red. Now pictures all of a sudden look very like sunset type, even if you don't have that kind of light. It's a really interesting way to use regular negative film, and again you can get this processed and printed no problem whatsoever.
So it kind of is it looks just different somehow.
It looks very different.
It's
looks
not
like
red.
It looks like you put some weird digital filter on them, but it is a fully analog process, and at the end you have an actual photo in your hands that you can hold.
It actually looks like the end of the world, kind of, the color, right? It's kind of like, it's kind of a weird light, like the world has come to an end of some kind. Wow, that's fun. I like this.
Some digital filters do that too, though.
Wow. So do you have control when you use red scale film, or you just take the picture and hope for the best?
Well, you don't have too much control. You kind of have an idea what the image will come out like, but there's a bit of
it still has color. It's not all red. It's just,
it's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. Really interesting. Now I'm going to have to go get some red scale film. Do you have to tell the photo processor anything, or does he just process it?
Nothing at all. No. They will just process it as regular film. You can do this. By the way, you can make your own red scale film. It's a bit of an involved process, but you can do it.
Yeah, you're the kind of guy who prints your own vinyl records using a press that you bought at an auction. Yeah. All right. Chris Marquardt, you can – it's – you know, the thing that's great about Chris is he brings the fun back to photography and gets you out there and taking pictures. It's one of the reasons we do an assignment every week, and we have a new assignment. What is it, Chris?
The current assignment is foot.
Foot.
Whatever that means for
foot.
You.
All right. Look for a way to take an image that expresses the concept foot, whatever that means to you. When you do get an image you like, tag it with the word foot, upload it to Flickr, and then submit it to our tech guy group. Our moderator, Renee Silverman, will say thank you, and you can do up to one a week. And, probably we're going to wait a while to do this because I'm going on vacation, maybe, and then you're going on vacation. So maybe we'll give you a little extra time on this one. What do you think, Chris?
Probably, yep.
Okay. Chris Marquardt, you find him at discoverthetopfloor.com, and you should look for him because he's even got a book. What's the name of your book on film photography if you want to learn more?
It's The Film Photography Handbook, and
love
it's in bookstores everywhere.
Yeah, I have a copy of it, and it's inspiring even for digital photographers.
There's a lot in there,
yeah. Yeah, really great stuff. It's just about kind of thinking about what you're doing and making it an artistic expression.
True.
Thank you, Chris.
Absolutely.
We'll talk again next week. Chris Marquardt. You can also go to his website, marquardt.com, marquardt.com. But I think Discover the Top Floor is a little bit easier. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Our show today brought to you by Active Campaign. If you have a business and you want to grow your business, if you need more customers, who doesn't, right? You want to reach out to existing customers and get them more engaged with what you're up to, you've got to find out about Active Campaign. It's much more than just marketing automation. It's all about getting the right type of message to the right person at the right time. That makes all the difference in your email campaigns, on your website, your mobile presence. If you send the right message at the right, it's all about the right message at the right time. Bingo. So why are you still sending blast emails that are the same email to everybody? No. With their smart tools, ActiveCampaign can help you dynamically show, get this, this is kind of miraculous, different content in your messages based on things like contact information, interactions, you know, what they've bought in the past, what they've looked at, social data, interests. You can send personalized messages whether they're on your website, whether they're browsing their email or out and about on a mobile device. Design eye-catching campaigns with the drag-and-drop campaign builder makes it really, really easy. And here's something I really like. You know, you've heard of A-B testing. We have two different versions, and you see what the response is. They don't even call it A-B testing. They got A, B, C, D, E, five different kinds, and it's called split testing. Find the exact content, the layout, the settings your subscribers respond best to, up to five different versions if you want. So you can really, really hone in. Of course, everybody in your organization can use it. They have multi-user editing. There's revision history, integrations with all your favorite tools, conditional content, geo-tracking, site tracking, social sharing. They integrate with Google Analytics, of course, mobile optimized and free image hosting. Yes, free image hosting with your account. Identify, nurture, convert, and retain more customers with ActiveCampaign. For a free 14-day trial, just go to activecampaign.com/twit, and they have a really good deal all around. You get the 2-week free trial, you get the second month free, you get two calls with an ActiveCampaign expert to help you get up to speed on ActiveCampaign. You even can migrate your existing campaigns into ActiveCampaign for free. All of that when you go to activecampaign.com/twit. ActiveCampaign. We thank them for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers and, you know, the internet and home theater and digital photography and, you know, smartphones. We got smart watches. We got smart everything these days. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the smartphone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you could still call me. You just use Skype out or something like that, and you'll be able to reach me toll free, I believe, 888-827-5536. The website where we write everything down, and there's even audio and video of the show after the fact, is techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. Line two is LeBaron from Mobile, Alabama. Hello, LeBaron.
Hello, how are you doing today, Leo?
I am well. How are you?
I'm fine. I've been one of the old ZDTV listeners, so I've been with you.
You know, we're celebrating May 11th, the 20th anniversary of ZDTV.
Yeah.
Amaze yourself.
Yep, I remember finding it on my old Comcast TV back in the day, and I've been following you since then.
Oh, I am honored. It's so nice to meet you, LeBaron. Thank you.
Okay, I had two quick questions about Mac-related questions, Leo.
All right.
One of them, I have an iMac that I think I bought in 2010, 2011.
All right.
And it's, overall, it's been good, but now it's just getting incredibly slow. Yes, super slow.
I wonder why that is. I'm going to think it's more the hard drive than the operating system or the processor. You know, Intel hasn't really sped things up all that much in the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's 2020 or 2011, I bet you the slowness comes from just the hard drive getting a little flaky.
And that's what I'm thinking, but I didn't know how hard it is to change a hard drive.
Well, on an iMac, it's a challenge because, well, you know, Apple, they don't want you to do anything. They want you to bring it in. But I have changed the hard drive on a 2010 iMac. It requires some specialized tools like a suction cup. The suction cup is so you can pull the screen off. And Apple has a big suction cup they use. But I'm going to point you to a company that I used to do our upgrade. They have videos, they have the tools, they have the hardware, you know, the hard drives and so forth. I would suggest, I think you'd see a massive speed improvement if you put an SSD in there, a solid state drive.
Okay.
A little more expensive than a spinning drive, but boy, you get some big bang for your buck. And with an iMac, you know, you could easily have a relatively small SSD inside, 128 or 256 gigabyte SSD inside, and then use an external drive for your data, and you'd get all the speed improvement and have kind of unlimited capacity for data outside the box. You just plug in an external drive. So go to Other World Computing. Their website is macsales.com, and that should make you feel good. That means they focus on Macintosh, and that's what you want. You got to be careful because you know, most of the parts out there for PCs, and they're not always going to work well with Macs, but if you go to macsales.com and you actually enter in the exact model number, you know, late summer 2010 iMac or whatever it is, they will tell you what hardware you could put in there. They have a video, and I recommend watching the video before you do this. So you can you could say, not going there, or yeah, I could do that. They will send you the tools, so get the full kit. And that is if any computer, that is the single best upgrade you can make, in my opinion. If you've got enough RAM already, if you've got, you know, 8 gigs of RAM, the next best next thing to do is absolutely put a solid state drive in there. That speeds everything up.
Okay, I'll give that a shot. And my second question is still kind of Mac related.
Okay.
I have a lot of music I purchased off of iTunes over the years.
Yes, me too.
But I was considering buying a cheap MP3 player for when I'm working in the yard, I'm exercising, don't want to have my phone with me. Just buy one of these cheap ones to have a playlist when I'm doing those type things.
Yeah.
A lot of my old music has a copy protection on them and stuff.
So here's what you do. Here's what you do. You can get rid of the copy protection legally for $25. You buy iTunes Match. That's for a year. And what iTunes Match does, Apple doesn't talk about it much anymore because they've got this Apple Music. And actually, you know, I wonder, Apple Music might do this. So I'll have to look into it. It's Apple's really confused, muddied the waters by having all these different things. iTunes Match predates Apple Music. And the idea was it would match all the music you have on your hard drive in the cloud. And that way you could stream it on your phone or whatever. But here's the beauty part of it. Once you matched everything and make sure everything's matched, and then take your music out of the iTunes folder, put it somewhere just so you don't lose it, but put it somewhere else. Then go back into iTunes. iTunes will say, well, you own all these songs, but it'll have a little cloud icon next to it saying, but they're in the cloud. And then you press the download for all of those. You can select them all and then press download once. It'll re-download the matched music. But what it will have done is replace the copy-protected AAC file with an uncopy-protected 256 kilobit AAC file. In fact, it'll also replace stuff you didn't buy from iTunes, but if you ripped CDs, maybe in the old days you ripped them at 128 kilobits or 96 kilobits, it'll replace those with much higher quality 256 kilobit AAC files. So it'll rebuild your library and all the copy protection will be gone.
Okay, and then I could move those files.
Then you could put them on a SanDisk, Sansa, or any dumb MP3 player. I use a MP3 players from FIO, F-I-I-O. They play high-resolution music as well as AAC and MP3 files. So it'll give you high-quality versions that you can put on anything and play back on anything. You don't have to use iTunes anymore.
Okay, that'll help me because, like I said, I didn't want to carry my phone around when I'm working out in the yard or whatever.
If you get, the Sansas from SanDisk are really – they're dirt cheap. They're not very good. But they're cheap. You can put
I'm looking for doing it.
If you're mowing the lawn, you don't care how good that sounds. You just want to have something to keep you company. You can put a podcast on them too, and all sorts of stuff. So I think that's a good way to go. Get rid of the copy protection with iTunes Match. I will have to check. I think Apple Music does the same thing. So check and see. I think if you're already paying for Apple Music, you don't need to pay the extra $25 a year for iTunes Match. But Apple does not make this completely clear, so I'm going to have to do some research to figure that out.
All right. Well, thank you, Leo.
My pleasure.
Like, been a fan for years.
Thank you for listening all these years, LeBaron. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Take care. Yeah, well, it's funny because I'm a fan of good music, of high-quality music. But you have to recognize, if you're driving in the car or you're mowing the lawn or, you know, you're commuting to work on a subway or a bus, there's so much noise around you that it doesn't matter if the music fidelity is perfect. For that, an MP3, 128 kilobit MP3, is fine. It's only when you're sitting, you know, with a good stereo or good speakers or headphones and sitting in a, you know, prime spot and, you know, eyes closed and you're really listening to the music, that's when the quality matters. And most people these days, music is wallpaper 90% of the time. It's not, it doesn't need to be super high fidelity. I do lobby, I do believe, I want the young people today, because young people are not exposed to, not in the way I was anyway as a young person, the idea of sitting and listening to music. Do you do that? You sit and listen to music? No, most of the time we're doing something else. We're cooking in the kitchen, the pan's sizzling and the water's bubbling and there's kids shouting and you have music in the background. Then the quality doesn't matter.
But if you're sitting and you're listening, you're sitting on the couch and paying attention with your eyes closed, that's when you want good quality. I would kind of encourage people. I would like to see a return to that a little bit. Musicians care. I mean, they're making this beautiful stuff. They hear it. They hear it in all its beauty, its splendor as they perform it. And it'd be nice if, you know, people had that same appreciation. Didn't think of it as just, you know, sonic wallpaper. So that's my little campaign. Get some good headphones. You don't have to spend more than a couple hundred bucks, but get some good headphones and really listen to the music. And I think that's something missing from our lives these days. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to call and ask a question, make a suggestion, talk about high tech. That's what I'm here for. I come in to do this just for you, so make sure you take advantage of it. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. We're going to take some calls. We're actually going to keep going after the show. I'm recording ahead for vacations. We give you a whole new show next week when I'm out of town. So keep those phone calls coming. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Thanks to Michael Cozio, our musical director, for playing the great music today. So I'm trying to figure out, it's not easy. I'm reading an article from one of my favorite sites for information about Apple's policies and programs, iMore.com. Apple Music versus iTunes Match. Match predated music. But So Apple Music does do the matching. Up to 100,000 songs from your iTunes library to the copy protection free iTunes store catalog. The problem with using iTunes Match or with not using iTunes Match and just using Apple Music is iTunes Match will even match songs that you didn't buy from Apple. If you bought it from Apple, Apple Music's all you need. If everything you got came from the iTunes store, Apple Music is all you need. But if you are, you know, have your own, you know, live version of Mr. Roboto that is not on the Apple store, then you do want to do iTunes Match. Most nowadays, there's so much on Apple's music. There are very few songs that aren't there. I wouldn't worry about that so much. So you don't need to do iTunes Match if you have Apple Music. You can do kind of the same thing that I mentioned before to remove copy protection from older songs that you purchased from Apple. You just move them out of the iTunes. First match them. Get Apple Music going and matching. And then move them out of the iTunes folder and re-download. Now, if you cancel Apple Music, remember that's a month-to-month subscription or a yearly subscription. If you cancel it, any matched, uploaded, or purchased tracks you've downloaded will remain on the devices and playable, but you won't be able to stream anything that is in the cloud and not downloaded anymore. You'll lose that. It's very confusing. You know, let me put a link. I'm going to let you read this article and try to parse. I don't know why Apple makes this all so complicated, except I guess that, you know, they had the Match service first, then they added music, and they didn't want to get rid of the Match service, but now it's gotten crazy confusing. Larry, West L.A. is next. Hi, Larry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Well, hello, Leo.
Well, hello.
Let me do this over. Long time listener, first time caller in the name of Mr. Likas.
Okay. What can I do for you, Larry?
Can't believe I screwed that up. Anyway, so I have a question and some info, or I should say an update from NAB.
Okay. You're at the National Association of Broadcasters meeting.
I just returned.
I have just returned from Las Vegas, and I have this report. Yes. Good. I didn't go this year, so I'd love to hear what you saw.
Would you like that first before the question?
Either way.
Okay. Well, I will give you the update.
Okay.
So I had seen the initial presentation, or I should say the first incarnation of Sony's tile solution called integrated structure. It's now down to CLED because they say it sounds more like a disease. So they just
it does, doesn't it? Sea lead disease. I have sea lead
or crystal lead. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with the this tile solution, micro LED.
Yeah, I am familiar with micro LED, and of course at CES, Samsung showed a very large micro LED television set, 4K television set.
Yes, and the wall.
Yeah, the wall. We realized it had to be that big because they couldn't get the micro LEDs small enough. So I'd love to hear what Sony has done. I'm sure they're working on this too. These C LEDs.
This is like the fourth year it debuted at Infocom back in, I think, 2016.
Yeah.
And now they've got, for the first time, they displayed a, check this out, 18 by 32 foot 8K display.
Yeah, it has to be that big. So let me explain how micro LED works, or crystal LED. I presume Sony's using roughly the same technology. Is you have three LEDs for every dot on the TV, red, green, and blue. So it's you're watching direct view of these LEDs, and they're lighting them in the appropriate amount to get any color in the spectrum. But that means you've got to get each dot. There's a limit to how small it can be because it has to hold three LEDs. And when you see giant screens, a 32 by 9 foot screen to do 8K, that's because that tells me they haven't gotten the pixels down to a reasonable size for a home user yet.
Well, the micro LEDs are they claim to be 3 microns. However, if you go to the website and you look on the ZRD/2 module, you'll see the pixel pitch says 100 and something 1.2 millimeters. So I don't know. I just
that's pretty big. That's pretty big. Apple is also working on this. Apple has purchased a company that does micro LEDs and has a big prototyping factory in Silicon Valley. The rumor is they're going to do this for the Apple Watch first, and then eventually more. I agree. This is the next generation of televisions. Will be micro LED. Has a lot of advantages.
There's no question. But I spoke to Kevin O'Connor, who's the director of marketing for North America, and all the other executives there. So I'm fully aware of what they're doing. And basically what you have is an absolutely staggering picture. I mean, I'm talking.
Really?
There is the uniformity range. I didn't tell you, 120 frame rate material they were showing from their UHC 8300 broadcast.
It's like real life, right? It's like you're looking out a window.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's going to be used in the NHK funded all this, by the way.
Yeah. It seems like all the good stuff comes from Japanese television. Hey, I got to take a break. Hang on just a second. We're going to take a break. Coming up, more of your calls, 8888-ASK-LEO. And as I mentioned earlier, I will be continuing to take calls after the top of the hour. The radio show will end, but my duties will not. We'll be recording ahead of time because I'm going on vacation. Rich DeMuro will be in this seat in 2 weeks from KTLA. I know you look forward to that. And I'll be back May 6th. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So I think this is pretty exciting, but it does sound like we got a ways to go, don't we? Larry,
are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Am I off the line? Yeah.
Yeah.
No. We have no ways to go at all. The only problem right now is the cost. How much do you guesstimate that display is listing for? I want to see if you.
Well, but who wants a 32 foot by 8 foot display?
Well, Google's got a 9x32 and they're up in the Bay Area. You should know that.
Yeah, but who wants in their home anything big?
This is not for consumer. No. This is just I just mentioned it because I figured you would. I probably shouldn't even mention it on the air because it is for commercial application.
Yeah. So what my interest is, and everybody else's, is when this becomes a consumer product, and one of the big problems they have to price is not an issue because, of course, it always falls. But the big issue is how you get those pixels down to a normal size so you can have a 72-inch TV instead of a What is? Well, I don't know what the measurement is on a 32-foot by 8-foot TV.
The deal is this. Yeah, I mean, this is an extended conversation. But the deal is that Samsung is probably going to be the first. Sony's not going to. They're only offering this as a commercial application for digital signage and whatnot. But for a small consumer TV, yet Samsung is probably going to be doing this, selling consumer units. Now, I will tell you that Samsung does have a cinema. Are you familiar with the Samsung cinema, what they call the cinema screen, which is going to be installed or completed next week in Winnetka down here in L.A.?
No.
They're working on it right now. It's the same size, but instead of 8K, it's 4K.
But that's for a movie theater.
Exactly.
So that's a direct view a movie theater screen. I don't know of any direct view movie screens at all. That's
you've got to see it. You know, you've got to go up to. You should go up to Infocom. You should go up to Infocom in May up in Vegas. And they're likely. I'll know in a couple weeks. I'll know at the end of this week from Kevin O'Connor if they're going to have it. More than likely, the turnout or the response was so huge that they're probably going to repeat this again at Infocom next month up in Vegas.
I would love to see this cinema screen. So real quickly, because I only have a minute left, what's your question?
Okay, my question, and I actually wanted to, too bad, maybe I can call back another time to tell people online. My question is what is the best, most secure VPN and MAC address solution?
You know, VPN is all equally secure. The issue really is whether you trust the company that's offering the VPN solution and whether they're logging, whether they give up your information to people who ask, that kind of thing. And that's very hard to verify. There's also a technical issue with some VPNs using WebRTC that they may give up your IP address. Now, most people don't use VPN for anonymity. They use it for security, and so that doesn't impede the security, but leaking your IP address might be something people don't want. And we've seen a number of implementations that leak IP addresses too. And this is a moving target, and I don't feel qualified to say which is the best one. I'll tell you the one I use, which is from Wi-Fi Consulting in Washington, D.C. I found them to be very reliable. They don't log. But if you go to Tiny Hardware Firewall, you can read about that, and they have the black hole VPN. They're very good. I'm not sure what you mean by MAC configuration, MAC address solution. I don't know what you mean by that. There are apps that will spoof MAC addresses, if that's what you mean, but I'm not sure what you mean by that. We're out of time anyway, so thank you, Larry. I'm ready. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Let's get back to the phones on line one. Looks like we've got Kelsa from Los Angeles. Hi, Kelsa.
Leo, longtime listener, first time caller.
Welcome. Yay. What can I do for you?
Hey. So you're not even going to believe this when I tell you this, but I am on Vista.
Oh, I believe it. I'm not happy about it, but I believe it.
It's been a very long time since I've done any kind of upgrades. I've got I'm the workaround queen. I've got like three external hard drives. I've got pieces all over the place, and it is time for me to go to Best Buy with my credit card.
Yes,
and do something about this. So
how
I need
exciting!
To get new,
let me ask
I
you.
Need everything.
What do you do with your computer?
Well, that's the thing. That's why I'm a freelance reporter and an actor. So I have tons of video, like lots of video, lots of pictures. So I need space, which is why I have all of these external hard drives. And I'm always editing stuff. And right now I can't even go into MPEG-4. All of my stuff is
right.
So old.
No, yeah, you can't. So video editing. So I'm always looking. When I talk to people, the reason I ask this question is I generally want to push people towards more secure, simpler solutions like Chromebooks or iPads. But video editing, you know, depending on how complicated you want to get it, that's a hard thing to do on a Chromebook. It's actually not that hard on an iPad. The reason I like both of these is that the problem with Vista and any version of Windows is you're really opening yourself up to all sorts of security problems. You have to kind of become a mini security expert as you have, I'm sure, to continue to use these. Although, if you're really concerned about security, using Vista is not a good idea because Microsoft no longer patches it. And, of course, you're running up against the, you know, browsers not being updated, a lot of things not being updated. So
already, Chrome, I'm using a Chrome, and it's already telling me this is
they won't support
it. I can't download.
Yeah, there's
all kinds of stuff. So it's like that.
So are you against the idea of using a Mac?
Yes.
Okay. So it's a Windows 10 for you.
Yes.
Do you want a laptop or a desktop?
Probably a desktop. I have an iPhone, although it's also bursting at the seams, but I can deal with that in another day. And I'm plugging in my iPhone and constantly downloading stuff into my computer. I know a Mac would probably make more sense, but I hate Mac.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah. If you hate Mac, you hate Mac. I'm not going to force you. No one here is coerced into doing anything they don't want to do. And Windows 10 is great. I really like Windows 10. One of the things you get with Windows 10 is a huge variety of different kinds of form factors. You get everything from a standard laptop to the Ultrabook, the ultralights. You get the convertibles, which the screen folds over and turns into a tablet. You can get the detachable two-in-ones like Microsoft Surface, where the screen detaches from the keyboard and becomes literally a tablet, and everything in between. And that's just the portables. So there's a lot of choices for you, and that's where it becomes difficult. What's your budget?
Well, that's the thing. As I said, I'm a freelance reporter and an actress. So
you have no money, in other words. Yes. Now I understand.
So, yeah, I mean, I want to go. I would definitely, now I have to spend some money. I can't keep doing this. This is ridiculous. But
One thing I might suggest is that you look at places in the cloud to store your photos and video. Google, for instance, offers virtually free unlimited video and a photo storage. Where it would be in the cloud, it would be protected, it'd be safe, you'd have access to it, it'd be easier to share because instead of sending somebody a copy or even, you know, putting it on Dropbox, it's already on the Google Cloud. You just send them a Google Cloud link. So for headshots, for videos, I think that's a great solution.
It is, and I have already got stuff in the cloud. The problem is because everything is so old, like all of my editing software, everything is just so old. And Photoshop, I do Photoshop too. None of this none of it's going to work, I'm assuming, once I upgrade.
No, you're going to have to buy all new software too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the issue.
This is going to get really expensive.
Yeah, that's why I've been delaying it.
Yeah, I don't blame you. But that's why I would love to look at maybe not being so heavily reliant on desktop software and desktop storage, but using some of these free services to store your stuff. Google has some limited editing capability. If you got, you know, there unfortunately there aren't any free video editors on Windows, but Adobe makes its Premiere Elements for under $100 is a very good editor and does everything need.
I actually used to use that way back in the day.
Yeah.
And I do, it's not so much the storage that's the issue, because I can put it on an external hard drive, and I don't know that. It's more just downloading stuff and then working with the video.
Right. So you do need a lot of internal storage as well. You need some speed because you're doing video editing. You're talking about a fairly expensive computer. Have you thought about the form? Do you want a laptop?
I would rather have a PC.
Good, a desktop. A tower is cheaper.
Yes.
Yeah,
I don't have a problem with that at all. But the one thing, because I went and I looked at all the stuff, and because I haven't bought a computer in so long, now I noticed a lot of it's attached, like the monitor's attached to the hard drive.
That's called an all-in-one. Don't get an all-in-one. You spend more for that. People do that because they want fewer wires. They want a more aesthetic experience. You're looking for a workhorse. You're looking for a tool. And I would start, I'll tell you what we get for our video editors. We get Dell workstations. Now, the workstations are more expensive, but I would look at Dell. They're not pretty. They're functional. They're very...
I don't care about pretty.
Right. But you want function, and you want a good price for it. So I'd start with a Dell Inspiron desktop. It's a tower. If you have an existing screen, keyboard, and mouse, you don't have to buy them.
Right.
A new screen might be a nice thing to have if you want to treat yourself.
Yeah, I have one. My old monitor just crashed, and so that's getting garbage. So I usually have two monitors. So right now I only have one. So I need to get another monitor as well.
You probably don't need an Intel i7. An i5, 7th or 8th generation i5 would be fine. You might want to look at the AMD Ryzen processors. Those are even more economical and give you probably...
I don't know that. R-Y-Z-E-N.
AMD's always been a strong competitor to Intel. They're not quite the Intel power, but they're pretty close for a lot less money, and they're absolutely 100% compatible. So that's a good way to go. But Dell offers both Intel and AMD processors. You can choose a base station, a base unit for you with Windows 10 and an i5 processor. I'd put in probably 16 gigs of RAM, a little more memory for you. And then maybe you're already going to be using external drives. You probably get by with 512 gigabytes of solid state storage. Do get the solid state. That'll speed things up a lot for you. And we're talking well under $1,000 for this, what I just described to you.
Yeah, that would be great because I was hoping maybe, you know, $500 or $600 if I was.
Yeah, well, it's all going to depend on what you have to spend, and Dell lets you customize it till you get the price you want. They start at $499, so I would look at an Inspiron desktop, Inspiron from Dell.com. I think for your price point and what you need, this is going to be a good choice. And I think Windows 10 is really a lot more secure, certainly more secure than Vista, but even more secure than Windows 7 and 8. A lot easier to use. You remember to save some of your budget for a new screen. Dell has some very nice, inexpensive 24 and 27-inch monitors. And big is good when you're doing video editing because you can have your video on there almost full screen and still have room for controls and so forth. And I think Premiere Elements for under $100 is good enough. Same thing with Photoshop Elements. Save some money on the software. Good luck. Have fun. Enjoy your new computer. Dude, you're getting a Dell. 80. you know, there's other good choices, too. HP actually now makes pretty good desktop computers. The Pavilions have gotten so much better than they used to be. I used to really avoid recommending them. Acer has some good low-cost choices. Asus, A-S-U-S, very good. There's lots of choices out there for desktop computing, but I generally go with Dell as a default. That's pretty much what we use in the business, almost entirely. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by my blogging, hosting, internet platform, WordPress.com. I'm such a big fan of WordPress.com. I've been a WordPress fan since Matt Mullenweg first put it out in the 2000s. Ran a WordPress site for many, many years on my own servers. Then I discovered, hey, what am I doing? I could use WordPress.com. They host it for less than I was paying for generic hosting. They keep it up to date. You've always got the latest version. They've got all the plugins and templates you could ever want. I mean, you have to decide, why am I doing a website? Is it so that I learn all the ins and outs of how the web works, or because I've got something to say, I've got some content, I've got a business I want to tell people about? If you're not looking to become a web guru, you've got to check out WordPress.com. Actually, even if you are, you've got to check out WordPress.com. The easiest way, it gives you the freedom and flexibility to share your voice, your work, your way. Having your own site is so important. That Facebook page, you don't own it. We're learning that now. Facebook owns that. That Twitter feed, you don't own it. But WordPress.com, your WordPress site, you own it. Get your own domain name from WordPress.com. Set up a template. They've got great customer support. They're there 24/7 Monday through Friday. So you can get support in the middle of the night if you need to. They're even there on weekends. Of course, they do e-commerce. Powerful e-commerce options ranging from a simple buy button to a full online store. And WordPress.com is very affordable. The plan started $4 a month. They also make it easy to expand your reach, to get your business known. They've got built-in SEO, social sharing. I love that. And WordPress.com is its own community. So you can also have a favorite button on there, and members of the WordPress.com community will see you. You might even show up on the front page there. All the plugins you might need. I use plugins like Google's AMP plugin to speed up my mobile loading. HTTPS, of course, because we want to be secure. You know, it's really no surprise. 30% of all websites run on WordPress. You can just get started today with 15% off your new plan purchase if you go to our special page, WordPress.com/TechGuy. WordPress.com/TechGuy. 15% off your brand new website. It's no wonder 30% of all the websites in the world
30%, almost a third, run on WordPress. That number is so huge, it's almost hard to believe, but it's true. I've been watching it go up, too, by the way. There's good reason. It's the best. WordPress.com/techguy for 15% off your brand new website. You want to see my WordPress site? By the way, when I go to Japan, that's the first place to go if you want to see photos and information from the trip. In fact, I've got to do a blog post. I've been putting it off about my workflow, my photo workflow. It'll be up there at leolaporte.com. That's my WordPress site. What's yours? WordPress.com/techguy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Thank you, Michael. Michael Cozio, our musical director. Thanks to Kim Schaffer, too. She's been working so hard answering the phones, getting you prepared for your appearance on national radio. 8888 Ask Leo. And as I said, even though the show's over in about 15 minutes, I'm going to keep answering calls for another 45 minutes or so. So keep those calls coming in. We're recording ahead for my vacation just around the corner. I don't like to do reruns, you know. Because I'm going to be gone for 2.5 weekends, we're going to record 3 shows ahead of time. We recorded all the calls. I'll be doing recordings of all the breaks and everything. So it'll be all brand new, nothing anybody's ever heard before. And then we're going to bring in Rich DeMuro for one of those weekends. So not next weekend, but the weekend after, the last weekend in April. Rich DeMuro will be filling in for me from KTLA-TV in Los Angeles. He does a great job, so I think you'll enjoy him if you haven't heard him before. Glenn in South Carolina is next. Hey, Glenn, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great, Glenn. How are you?
Fine. I have been following you guys since the old tech TV days.
Oh, another one, huh?
Yeah, I apologize for the speech impediment. I had a lot of dental work done Friday.
Oh, you sound fine. You sound fine.
I just wanted to give you a pat in the back, on the back for today's show.
You've seen me struggle today, haven't you?
Well, it got so bad I had to go out on the deck. I mean, I got a doctorate in experimental physics.
Oh, my goodness. Oh,
well, I was doing radio astronomy, and one of the scaffoldings collapsed, and I became disabled.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, you live with it.
Do you get to practice physics still a little bit, or astronomy at all?
I ran two planetariums for 20 years.
Nice.
And in from those people, I could never recover like you did.
Yeah, I love planetariums, by the way. This is the hidden secret of many communities. These planetaria are so fun. You go there, it's relaxing, they darken the room, and some smart person like you tells you all this cool stuff about the universe around us. I love planetarium shows. I make a point whenever I'm visiting a city to see if they've got a planetarium, and surprisingly, most do now, which is great.
Yes, they do. And I think it's very important that the show lasts no more than 25 minutes.
Oh, that's good, because I was at a 2-hour show and I fell asleep. It's too relaxing.
Yeah. And the last 20 minutes are devoted to questions and answers regarding the presentation.
Good for you. Well, you know, the people ask some fun questions, don't they?
Yes, they do. Kind of like what you asked today.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad you understand.
Pat on the back.
Glenn, bless you. So you're not working in the planetarium anymore? You retired from that?
I retired, and I'm building a Linux and Chrome box at the moment.
How fun.
Well, I'm a Windows guy, too, but we weren't even allowed to use assembler when I was in school. We had to do only binary, and when we could
wait a minute. You had a program in ones and zeros?
Yes, sir.
Holy cow.
But I wanted to give a big shout out not only to you but a couple of other people on your network, if you don't mind.
I don't mind at all.
A special hello to Steve
Gibson.
Father Robert
Ballasaire.
Patrick
Norton.
And Mary Jo and Paul.
Mary Jo Foley, Paul Thurrott. These are all hosts of our various shows. Steve does our security podcast, Security Now. Paul and Mary Jo do our Windows Weekly show. Father Robert Ballasaire does Know How. He's the digital Jesuit. Unfortunately, we're losing him. The Pope has called him to Rome.
I know.
And I don't mean R-O-A-M. I mean Roma, Italy.
So, I know, Matt. He's going to be declared for sainthood.
He's going to be a bishop someday, maybe even a cardinal. Yeah. He's on his way, but we are going to lose him as a host. He's wonderful. Of course, Patrick Norton, who hosts our This Week in Computer Hardware show, is also a longtime friend from the good old days at Tech TV. And
oh, I remember when he was young and had some hair.
Well, all the hair, something weird happened to him because all the hair came down from his head onto his chin. It's all on his chin now.
And I'll let you go. I know you have important questions. You have an extraordinarily pretty young lady answering your phone.
Well, now Kim is going to blush, I know, but I couldn't agree with you more. Oh, see, she's turning bright red. I couldn't agree with you more.
Thank you so much for the work you do and especially for the patience and recovery you showed during today's show.
Well, you know, it's easy for me to be patient, I'll be honest with you, because thank you for your very kind words. I really appreciate it, Glenn. I feel like people are wandering in the wilderness, really. I often wonder, you know, my family and friends, the people around me, I watch them all the time, and I don't know, you know, I'm there to support them, but I watch their bafflement when they're faced with this stuff. And it reminds me that most of the technology we use in our lives, and we use it all the time, every day, is designed by engineers for engineers. And I love engineers, whether they're hardware engineers or software engineers. I understand the mindset, but they are often not the best people to to design interfaces for normal people. Or software or hardware for normal people. And so, and then, of course, these computer companies have gotten so profit sensitive. Their prices have, you know, it's our fault. We've forced the prices so low on hardware and software to some degree that they can't afford really good tech support. And people who are really knowledgeable and good aren't generally working the customer support lines. Partly because, you know, if you're really good, you can get a better job as an engineer. And partly because a lot of engineers aren't really good at talking to people, communicating. So we're in a position now where we use so much technology in our lives, but so much of it is baffling to us, confusing. And I see this every day when I talk to people on the show. And that's I feel like that's kind of, I've got to do this work to help because it's confusing. I don't blame you. Unfortunately, a lot of the times, there's not much I can do to help. People have gotten themselves in such pickles, dug such deep holes for themselves, or they're trying to do stuff. It's as if you're trying to be a concert pianist and you never took a lesson. It's just, it requires a considerable amount of effort to operate and maintain a computing system these days. That's why I like iOS. I like Android. I like Google Chrome OS because in many cases these are much simpler. They don't do as much, but they're something that people can get their heads around and don't need to be, you know, kind of security experts to use. But I understand how it is, and I'm glad I can be here to help people and answer their questions. So thank you very much, Glenn, for your kind words. Thank you, Kim Schaffer. Thank you, Michael Kozio. Most importantly, thanks to you for putting up with me. We'll fix this stuff together. We'll get it working together. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.